The following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
Bizarre.
Bazan. Bazan. Bazan.
Bazan. Bazan. Bazan. Bazan. Bazan.
This is Bazan, the Bazaar and Weird Fiction Podcast. With me, your host, Mr. Frank Zongers. Thanks for joining us again. I appreciate it. Each and every time you tune into Bazong to find out what's going on in bizarre and weird fiction. Like this week, we got a lot more stuff to talk about in the world of bizarre and weird fiction, but we can't do that, of course, Zongers, as you know, unless we acknowledge our fine sponsors of not only Bazong, but the entire Project Entertainment Network. I, of course, am talking about none other than the legendary Subculture Corsets and Clothing. You can find them down in Jacksonville, Florida. They're located just a half a mile off of I-95 at the Glorious Avenues Mall over there in Jacksonville, Florida. But if you don't happen to live in the area and you can't get over there and hop, skip, and jump, you can always shop their store online at www.subculturecourses.com. There you can shop all their great products, including steampunk, rockabilly, pinup, goth, and of course, the finest corsets money can buy, Zongers. They've also got shoes and accessories and, of course, men's clothing as well. And they include sizes 4 through 4X. So everybody can shop at Subculture Corsets. Check them out online or in person. Shop the store. There you will receive 10% off your entire order in person or online if you use the promotional code BIZONG. And it will be off your entire order, not just one item, Zongers, your entire order. So load that card up, shop more, save more, Zongers. The more you buy, the more you save at subculturecourses.com with your friends at Bazong. Thank you, Subculture Corsets, for sponsoring the Project Entertainment Network and Bazong. And this week, Zongers, we continue our interview with the new Bazaar authors. Week back-to-back weeks here. We are now talking this week. Just released in May was a book called Winnie, the third release in the new Bizarre Author Series for 2018. Winnie was written exceptionally by the very talented and lovely Katie Michelle Quinn. So Katie joins us this week. She's going to talk about her experience with the new Bizarre Author Series, the whole process, how she came to be a part of this year's crop of writers that took part in the series. And we're going to talk about a great many things that makes Katie's writing click. It was a fun interview I had with Katie, and I hope you have fun listening to it as well. So without much further ado, Zongers, let's get into the Bazong interview of the one and only Miss Katie and Michelle Quinn. Give us the gong. It is my pleasure this week to bring to you another one of those fantastic new Bizarre authors for 2018. Her book, Winnie, just came out in May, and she's here on Bazong to talk about it today and all the other great stuff she's got going on. Please welcome to Bazong, Katie Michelle Quinn. Katie, welcome to Bazong.
Awesome. Thank you, Frank. It's good to be here.
I'm glad to have you here. This is 2 weeks in a row now. We've had new Bizarre authors on the air. Like I said before, I always enjoy talking to you all because you have this cool new perspective on Bizarro and sort of the scene at the moment. You're bringing the new voice to Bizarro, all you new Bizarro author writers. And this year is no different, especially with the changes, the little tweaks and stuff that have been made to the new Bizarro author series. Mm-hmm. So it's especially fun this year to talk about all that stuff. So let's talk about, first of all, let's talk about Winnie. You want to tell us what Winnie is all about?
Yeah, so I guess the elevator pitch is Winnie is a trans-metaphorical story about the relationship between a gun owner and his favorite rifle, and how that progresses and changes after she changes into a human woman.
Just that simple. I love simple elevator pitches that draw you right in. You know immediately what the story is about. And hopefully you're on board for it. So it sounds like a very awesome concept. And it does have that classic bizarro, you know, turns out the inanimate object is a sentient being type of thing to it. So it has that nice feel. How did you get Winnie into the new Bizarre Author series? What was that road?
So that road was, I've kind of been a friend of Garrett for a couple years, and I've submitted stuff to him before, and he's familiar with my work. So I guess I was kind of lucky in the case that he reached out to me and asked me to pitch him some stuff to be a part of the series this year. So I sent him, I think, maybe 10 or so little, you know, 3-4 sentence pitches. And this was the one he liked, and so I just went with it.
Now, were you writing at all before Garrett approached you about doing a book for this?
I mean, I've been writing, for a while, if that's what you're asking. I wasn't specifically writing for the NBAS at the time.
Mm-hmm. Did you have stuff published elsewhere prior to Winnie?
Just short stories and poems. This is definitely the most substantial publication I've had.
That's awesome. So you didn't necessarily, you didn't come through the channel of Garrett's workshop necessarily. He just knew you to be a writer, and he knows you as a friend and an acquaintance, I'm sure. So that's really, that network connection is how you kind of come to it all.
Yeah, I mean, I have taken his workshops. I've also just kind of been going to BizarroCon for the past 4 or 5 years. And since I'm from Seattle, it's pretty close to Portland, obviously. So I've just, I guess, developed those connections and relationships, and it ended up being very helpful.
Yeah, so, I mean, it obviously it helps to be out in that part of the world there that you can have those connections for quite some time now. I know, like, researching you, you know, it's sort of like I didn't really see a lot of work from you prior to Winnie, but I did see, you know, you've been around the Bizarro scene for a number of years now as a reader and an advocate for Bizarro. So it was interesting to me to find out, like, what made you take that leap into writing the book. And it was really just Garrett approaching you, like saying, I think you got something in you to do this.
Yeah, well, I think when someone kind of tells you, hey, I think you got something, it gives you a little fuel. And so once I got that confirmation to go for it, it took me, I think, a couple months, and just coming home, opening a beer and writing for as long as I could.
Now, did you find the process of writing? This must be the first thing you wrote of this length, I'm sure, correct?
Actually, no. I did try writing a pretty shitty Bizarro novella before, but obviously nothing happened with that.
Mm-hmm. So this is the first one. Was it still, was it almost like Garrett sort of leading you through a workshop situation with this, or did he really leave you like, I like that pitch, go write that book and show me what you come up with?
Yeah, it was actually the latter, which I think for me personally was helpful. I do like the workshop format, but sometimes it's nice just to take your time with something and you know, have your own input first before you send it out.
So what is it? How do you even discover Bizarro? Like, take us back that far, where when you first discovered Bizarro, what was it that brought you into the genre?
Totally. Well, for me, it was a specific person who's actually been on this podcast. So I went to college with Andrew James Stone.
Nice.
Yeah, who's written The Mortuary Monster. Mm-hmm. He has a book I'm super stoked to read, All Hail the House Gods, coming out pretty soon, I think. Yeah. So he actually introduced me to the Lazy Fascist stuff, Sam Pink, and through, once he saw that I liked that and wanted to read more, he told me about Eraserhead, and then I just kind of had a field day once I discovered that stuff and wove my own path through everything they put out.
Now, do you find it, as much as you love reading Bizarro, do you find any degree of difficulty in trying to write Bizarro?
Oh, definitely. So obviously Bizarro is all about weirdness, or at least a lot of it is about weirdness. And even though I'm a strange, awkward person, I have a hard time, I think, coming up with the kind of just strange characters and settings that I see a lot of writers writing, like, you know, Larissa Glasser, even.
Mm-hmm.
The first book in the series, I was just, like, boggled by how strange that was, and in a really awesome, good way, but I don't know if I'm the writer that could come up with something that unique, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's more my difficulty.
I agree. I find, you know, the same sort of feeling. Maybe for you, like for me, it's sort of a sense of like, am I forcing the weird? And you pull back or you just try too hard and screw it up that way, or it's not weird enough. And so I've always sort of shied away from purposely trying to write something bizarro. And yet, mm-hmm. It must be because I do this podcast, or possibly because maybe there is. Well, I know for a fact that the people I typically hang out with that are writers are, I'm very weird to them in the stuff I write, even though I don't really consider my stuff, you know, straight bizarro. But it's sort of undeniable that there is a level of weirdness that is not in the mainstream of genre stuff.
Totally. I totally get you there. Because I kind of came up through the literary, I guess, lens for most of my writing experience. But I had the same thing where it was just like, you know, I think I'm just weirder than this. And so I think the cool thing about Bizarro, especially nowadays, is it's really branching out to not just like be this specific thing as much as it is kind of the landing place for stuff that maybe doesn't fit anywhere else, you know, like misfit fiction.
Yeah.
Misfiction. I love
that.
Yeah.
I love that. Misfit fiction. That's gorgeous. Yeah, it's so true. It is so true, though. I mean, from what Bizarro was, you know, 10 years ago till now, the definition has expanded. And as much as that definition was already sort of ubiquitous or just undefinable nearly, it keeps expanding out to, like, it's not necessarily a formula type of thing for Bizarro. It's always ever changing, ever expanding. And, you know, as like you said, maybe I'm not writing something as crazy that I see as, you know, Larissa Glasser's F4 stuff, but you still have your own brand, your own voice of Bizarro, and that's a fantastic, gorgeous thing, I think.
Yeah, totally. I think that's why I'm drawn to kind of the more simple but strange concepts. Like I'm pretty happy with how Winnie turned out in that case. It's a simple concept, but mm-hmm. it's also pretty unique, I think. Not to sound like an asshole.
But it's unique. Well, and I haven't read it, but just off the pitch, it's unique mm-hmm. while maintaining a sort of sense of classic Bizarro to it. Like I said, that sentient being thing to an inanimate object is very popular in classical, quote unquote, classical Bizarro.
Yeah, the old school stuff, yeah.
So I totally dig that. It came out, was it May 19th was the release for Winnie, the official?
Yeah, May 15th. So it's 15th. Been just over 2 weeks, yeah.
2 weeks. You have a really good buzz on this. A lot of people talking about it. A lot of positive feedback that I'm seeing online. You even had a release party for the book that looked like a big old blast. How did that? Did you have to put the release party together? Was that you, or were you kind of working with Garrett and Rose on that?
Yeah, that was me. And that kind of goes back to just living close enough to be able to go to the source. And very fortunately, I had four other writers read with me who I very much look up to, and I'm so impressed with myself that they thought I was cool enough to show up. So yeah, it was a cool event. It was just at Old Gilbert Road Tavern, which is a kind of weird dive bar in Portland. It got a good turnout though, which was awesome. It was my first time putting on that sort of event, so I was a little nervous. and hopefully that didn't come across too much, but I thought it went very well.
That's all. Anytime you can get people out into a unique situation, and it's great that you had some other authors help you do readings and stuff like that. I mean, it sounds like an awesome time, but it sounds like an awesome way, you know, to release a book. You're not just sitting in some bookstore with a stack of your books hoping that somebody walks through the door and looking for a sign. You're like having a party with friends, and that scene and that atmosphere, you know, anybody else who's in the place is going to gain some interest and check it all out. Now you have a big old party and a lot of attention for yourself. Is that kind of how it really went down?
Yeah, totally. It also comes from just me being a musician too. So, you know, music, obviously you spend a lot of time writing and recording and getting the polished product. Mm-hmm. But the biggest part of music is going to shows, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's also the really cool part of writing, is showing up to see the person that put this thing together present it, you know, and read it the way they see it.
Yeah. Now, do you find that sort of parallel in going up there and doing a reading in front of an audience is like performing, or you think they're sort of different animals?
Totally. Yeah, for me, I've done some stranger performances, some more kind of straight readings. But anytime I get up, I try to make it interesting. You know, I don't want to get up there and just read the way anyone could read my stuff. You know, mm-hmm. I want to read it the way I do.
Do you add that sort of performance flair that is so popular in bizarro readings to your stuff? Or is it more just the inflection and putting on a sort of a, like you said, speaking that those words in your own voice, the way they're meant to be heard?
I would say it's both. So for the party wasn't like this as much, but for the BizarroCon reading this year that I did with Caleb Wilson and Larissa, I had my friend help me out by pretending to be Colt, who is the gun owner in my book, Winnie.
Mm-hmm.
And the big struggle with Colt is, despite the obvious fact that there's a woman standing in front of him, he continues to treat her, you know, like a rifle, mm-hmm. you know, trying to hunt with her, trying to clean her, that sort of stuff. So with the reading at BizarroCon, I took that concept and applied it to my reading. So I had my friend pretend to do that while I was reading. And I think a lot of people liked it. It turned out pretty interesting.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. That's a little different. That's sort of like shadow acting next to you with your narration.
Totally. Yeah.
That's really cool. So, I mean, I guess you were selling books at the event too.
Yeah, it was. I sold a few. I made a box there, and it's always cool when people you've never met before come up and buy your book. And so I had a few people I'd never talked to or met before buy it, and I saw that as a win. And a lot of people who have been very supportive and who I consider friends have also got copies.
Yeah, that's the best one. It's somebody you have absolutely no idea, a complete stranger, just takes interest in, like, yeah, I want to take my chance and read that book. Was it sort of specifically the feedback you got, or that, you know, from your reading and everything, where they said, I'm interested in that, let me take a chance, let me grab a book?
You know, I'm not sure, because I think some people bought it before I read, so obviously my reading wouldn't have affected them, their perception.
That's even more.
I think
awesome.
I think the concept really, especially to other trans folks and queer folks, who have identities that may differ from the majority, I think the concept really interests them, which I mm-hmm. was hoping for in writing it.
Now, you are a trans person. I don't know if I'm saying this. I don't want to offend anybody, but I'm just, you are a trans person, and you're in obviously in that community, and obviously your book is speaking to the topic and about the community. And that's a very unique for Bizarro. There's not a lot of it. There's some of it, and certainly far more than a lot of other genres, but like with Emma Johnson, where she was going to like these trans conventions and everything. I'm like, that's such a unique opera. How many people are, you know, trans authors showing up at these conventions to sell book? Like, you must have like the market cornered on trans literature. Do you sort of feel the same way? Like, you have this very unique product for that community?
I guess I don't, but maybe just because I have the interest, I'm familiar with the work of a handful of trans writers that I see is kind of way more valuable than my own work, I guess, if I'm honest. But yeah, so I guess I think it's unique in that it's my perspective. But I think there's also a lot of us out there if you choose to look, you know?
Oh, I'm sure there's tons of trans writers and everything, but like trans bizarre writers is kind of where I was going. There can't be a whole bunch of that.
Totally. Yeah, I see. Sorry.
No.
Yeah, I mean, it's a small community. So when you're a minority in a small community, it really shrinks down, I guess, the amount of writers doing that sort of thing.
How would you sort of categorize the trans literature at large? Is it more sort of a biographical essay type of, you know, relating experiences, or is there a lot of trans-based fiction out of there that would appeal to that community?
You know, I don't know if I have like a wide enough breadth of knowledge to speak to that. I would say the stuff that I'm most interested in is the fiction side. So that's kind of what I've sought out.
Is that something you seek out when you read, or do you, you know, that aspect of it doesn't necessarily, you know, you have to seek out that stuff. You're just seeking out interesting fiction.
I think it's both and. I know that sounds like a cop-out answer. I mean, definitely for me personally, there is a plus to knowing that a writer has a similar experience from you and being curious to see what they have to say on that.
Right.
But certainly I read writers of all experience, and I don't, you know,
you don't,
judge, I guess. A good book is a good book.
Right. But when you maybe find out an author is trans, you know, it's immediately more appealing to you because like everybody who reads any type of fiction, you're just looking to, I mean, the more you can relate to any story, the more you connect with it, and the more better that story is, you know, your experience with that story is. So, you know, I don't know, because I don't specifically seek that stuff out, but like, you know, a book like yours, it's just interesting. The story itself, the pitch itself sounds interesting. Like Larissa's book, F4, just sounds like a cool story. But I don't, I never seek out, you know, specific things. I know there's all these movements for, you know, women writers and people of color I don't feel a duty to read that specific. I feel a duty to read good books. And if they happen to be a person of color, if they happen to be trans, whatever the case may be, then, you know, wonderful too. But I'm always focused on the story. So I don't know, you know, you have a different experience than I do. And you know, you're seeking to connect with stories in a different way than I would. So I don't know, you know, how you're looking for stories as opposed to other people. I guess everybody's just freaking unique, right?
That's exactly what I was just going to say. I think everyone has different experience. And, you know, even though it's a different thing, say I don't know, your interests or, you know, your passions outside of writing, but say you read a writer and discover that they share that passion or interest, you know, there's a little bit of extra like, oh, cool. So they get this other part of me, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, I imagine too, it could sort of be like falling down a rabbit hole, where you find, you know, one person who say is trans and okay, let me check out that book because it's kind of sounds cool and appealing. And then you read that and it speaks to you in a special way. And then you sort of check out other books by that person or other books that are like how that person writes. And then you sort of, you know, just follow that rabbit hole, I guess, as you were into that, you know, area and those people that surround that sort of fiction, you know, I mean, that seems to me like how you follow, you know, books from anything. You know, you start with Stephen King and you wind up somehow reading Carlton Mellick, but it's all just a rabbit hole that you fall down. I guess it works that way no matter what it is you're seeking out.
Yeah, totally. I mean, reading is a rabbit hole, you know, from page one. And that's, I guess, for me, that's kind of at least how I've worked. You know, if I discovered someone cool, I was like, okay, I want to read all their books and see what other writers they talk to and who they spend their weekends with and what all those people are doing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I can say that it's different than I've worked, you know, my whole life. I just tend to follow the rabbit hole down. And I think that's how I work naturally.
Now, would it be fair to say that Winnie is written from your trans experience point of view? Like, it has that appeal to it?
Yes, definitely. It's from that perspective, but I wrote it to appeal to anyone. And I think a lot of people that have read it who are not trans or, you know, a part of that community still have gotten a lot out of it, which is my goal, because I don't intend to be a separatist in any way in my writing or in my life. So I don't want to, even though I am writing from a very specific perspective, I don't want to exclude readership, you know.
No, I mean,
I guess, kind of getting in the mud.
Right.
With it. Yeah.
You didn't necessarily write a trans-centric book, and it shows in the pitch of the story, because that's at its heart, it's just a love story, it sounds like, and it could mean any number, you know, it can translate itself in any number of way, because it is that bizarro concept of it's a gun that could actually be a woman, and the same thing with you know, any relationship where somebody isn't necessarily the thing that their partner thought they were, and has to deal with the reality of who that person they've come to fall in love with is that, like, kind of fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it just speaks to the experience of knowing that you're something and putting that out there and having that be ignored, you know, in lieu of the other person's perspective on you, which can be a lot of different things, I feel.
Now, another thing I wanted to ask you about too, and this is more into the marketing and stuff of the book and not necessarily the book itself, but I noticed that Winnie is currently only available in paperback, which is, I don't know. I it's funny that Eraserhead and a lot of bizarre presses aren't quick to release ebook versions all the time. Is that something that you wish you had the ebook version out there, or are you happy just having the physical paperbacks out there available for people?
I mean, I'm happy to have anything out there. I do know just through the process, and I don't think this is on Eraserhead. I think it's on Amazon, honestly.
Oh,
just kind of being maybe too big to catch every little thing, but I believe that each of the books were intended to be available on both both paperback and Kindle.
Okay.
So I guess that's something I'll have to maybe poke Amazon about.
Yeah, well, it could be just because it is, like you said, it's only about 2 weeks old, so maybe it's not quite ready for the digital, whatever gatekeepers at Amazon hold things back there. But you're sure that a digital version of Winnie is forthcoming?
I believe so, yeah.
So now, you know, after you get the book submitted and edited and it's all done and it's out there, I mean, how much control do you feel you still have over the book? Obviously, you put together a fantastic release party, but you know, you're not sure about the ebook and when that stuff is coming out. As far as your duty now, is it like you feel, all right, the book's out there, I've done my best to promote it, but really I need to get myself onto the next book? Is that how is your approach now that the book is released?
Yeah, I definitely intend to do more readings with Winnie and do some more kind of guerrilla marketing stuff just on Facebook. But yeah, you know, this is a book that I wrote over a year ago at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So I've started on, you know, my next project, hoping to bring that into fruition.
Very cool. So yeah, there is a certain, obviously you have to market what you have out there for now. You plan on doing, like,
you can't live in the past.
No. Now, is this how, I mean, for you, how much time and effort or do you put into writing? I doubt it's a full-time thing, but how much time are you dedicating to writing now that you have your book published?
So I'm definitely someone who tries to write every day, but yeah, it's not my job by any means, or how I make my living.
Mm-hmm.
But I do try to write every day. Typically my goal is 500 to 1,000 words. I think that's a good doable chunk mm-hmm. to do per day, and I take weekends off to, you know, get out of it for a bit.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. That's kind of where my goals lie as well. You know, 500 to 1,000 words a day, and, you know, in 2 or 3 months, there could be a book there, you know, worth of stuff.
Totally.
So, yeah, no, that's so nice. And to give yourself the weekends off for the burn, or just to have a break from it all, is mm-hmm. I think it's important for me. That's sort of how I roll. But, there's always, everybody's different, obviously, and I know there's people that, like, write every day, they have to do it, due diligence, and you can't stop writing, and there's others. I mean, I've talked to spoke with bizarro people who are like, I don't know, I write when I do, and if it's 3 months apart, then it's 3 months apart, and it doesn't bother them. But that sort of break for me would drive me insane. Do you think you could step away from it that long, or do you have to sort of, you know, not force yourself to write every day just to stay in the rhythm of things?
Yeah, I think for me, it's helpful to write every day. I've definitely stepped away for that long and longer, but also regretted it after the fact, because just like anything, when I do get back into it, I feel a lot less sharp, you know. You spend a lot of time trying to get back to where you were before you... At least that's how I work.
Yeah, no.
Before you took the break. I know there is people who can be just as on it, you know, 6 months later, which is, that's great, you know. That's fucking awesome, but I can't do that. I kind of have to keep it up, if only to stay sharp, you know.
Yeah, well, I even find, like, recently I had to take a break just because the job to pay the bills got so incredibly busy and took up so much of my time, where there was, you know, a week or two before I could sit back down in front of what I was writing. And it's just sort of like, where the hell was I, you know, type of thing. And you forget, especially when you're writing a longer thing, even if you sort of have it outlined out some, it's still like, mm-hmm. you know, the finer nuances, like you said, you're not sharp on it. You're not keen on it. You're not still in the headspace of that story. And it's almost like, you know, you got, it's like the Tin Man, you're a little rusty and you got to get everything kind of greased up and loose and moving again. And then once you get back into it, like you said, and you just got to keep yourself in that rhythm. That's my same sort of experience with writing.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. I don't know if you're this way too, but like I tend to listen to the same music when I'm writing a piece and try and do it at the same time of day. So kind of breaking that ritual almost really just breaks me out of the mindset, which is difficult to get back into.
Yeah, no, I've heard that. I don't necessarily like try to keep it that strict, because at times the best time for me to write is in the morning, real early before I leave for work. And then there's other times where that's just... No, I don't have it, you know, 4 o'clock
yeah,
in the morning,
it's not
I don't.
Possible.
And then I kind of try to switch to maybe afternoon, or I'll run out with a couple of my writer's friends and sit around in like a Panera and write or amongst them. I do have different mm-hmm. situations and stuff. And it's funny, the music thing is always sort of confounded me. For the longest time, I always found trying to write with music or television or anything in the background noise really distracting. And, I don't know what changed or anything, but the last book I wrote, or the last book I had published, I should say, since I've written other things since then, I started playing music to keep in a mindset of the book, and it was but I had to play music I was completely unfamiliar with. So I had to, like, you know, I'm like, I need this mood, but I can't know what it is. And I started doing that. And nowadays I can sort of write. It's still got to be like low and almost, you know, subliminal at the level I keep the music. But I do write more now with music on. But I always try to make it sort of, you know, have a flair for what it is I'm writing, just to keep a mood in the story, I find helps.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same way. I used to never be able to write with music, but I think living in a, not a huge city, but a place loud enough to get in the way, sometimes it's nice to have control of what you're hearing, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, I imagine too, if you're out and about, you know, people who do like that writing in Panera's or cafes or whatnot, and I mean, they're always talking about how people have to, you know, they have to walk up to them and, hey, you're writing. And that was, and I imagine that would be so distracting. Like, yeah, go away, you know, because that leads to the pro. I've got a great story idea. You should write this. And like, no, you should write that. I'm writing my thing.
Yeah, I can say I've had that happen. But I'm just someone who's easily distracted. If someone's having a conversation, mm-hmm. you know, I'm like, oh, what's going on?
Now, when you do write, I mean, do you outline, or you just kind of, you know, do that seat of your pants thing when you write?
You know, it's a little mix of both. When I get a concept, I found kind of the elevator pitch method of seeing if I can get the summary to be like 3 or 4 sentences mm-hmm. is helpful. Even if I'm not pitching it to someone, just kind of to see if that works mm-hmm. to me. And then I'll just, you know, spend a week or two doing the daily writing thing and see where that goes and see, you know, usually I catch a few more ideas during that process. And by that point, usually it's like, okay, well, where do I really want to go with this? And so then I'll start outlining.
Mm, yeah, nice. You sort of explore the idea before you really commit to it on a longer form.
I can't say I'm the type of person who can just cold turkey write an outline and have it be good enough to be a book, you know?
Yeah, I also work sort of similarly. I've, you know, I just finished writing the first draft of a, you know, my next thing, and but it took me forever to settle on that. I probably started and stopped 3 other potential projects that, you know, mm-hmm. came up to a point where, like, this just isn't working, and I just have to put it to the side. You know, I don't necessarily kill the idea, but I just put it to the side and try to take off on another idea. Like, so you said, you know, it's been a year since you wrote and completed Winnie. You know, how far are you now into your next thing?
Well, I guess bluntly, not as far as I'd like to be. So I guess maybe it's because I wrote a full-length book and was kind of tired out. But after that, I just started writing some shorter stuff, got mm-hmm. back into writing poetry even. So just, you know, page-long, how am I feeling about this sort of writing. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until earlier this year that I got a concept that I wanted to run with. And, you know, kind of going back to the exploring the idea process, I've probably started and stopped it in different ways 5 times now. So maybe if you put all that together, it's long enough to be a novella. But obviously, it's not cohesive. So
right.
I'm kind of trying to find the right way to spin it.
Is it bizarre? Do you continue to write bizarro?
Yes, I would definitely say I'm soft bizarro, uh-huh. if that's a thing, because I do enjoy poetry and literary fiction, mm-hmm. and those are things that I, you know, also want to reference in my own writing.
Right. So,
but like we talked about before, it's way too weird to just be that.
Right, yeah. So you don't think you could really ever write something more straight-laced or it's always going to have a certain element of weirdness to it, do you think? Or do you think you can at some point or you know, want to make a point of writing something more straight, literary, not weird per se?
Yeah, I definitely think that's possible and something I would like to do in the future. I recently read, I don't know if you've read Julia DeScoria's Black Clouds.
I have not.
It's a really good kind of short story collection that's very, I don't know her, you know, kind of her story, but it reads like very memoir-esque, and I think something like that could be interesting to write in the future.
Oh, okay. I like that. Yeah. I take that. Yeah. Sometimes that's like the funnest stuff is to, or the best stuff is to read the stuff where you're like, I don't even know, you know, what this is, but I certainly, you know, I don't know how to categorize it, but I certainly am really enjoying reading it and identifying with it. You know, it's something stark and different to you in your mind. And I'm sure.
Well, it's that cool thing too of like, I don't know if this is actually the author's story, but it could be.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of cool to have that vibe.
Yeah. And then what's cooler is if you think like, oh, that was totally autobiographical, and you either get to talk to the author or read interviews and stuff, and you find out like they completely made it up. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
You gotta be kidding me. That, like, oh my God, I thought for sure. Yes. That's, for me, it's always when it's not actually autobiographical, when you're convinced like this is his or her experience and that they completely made it up, and you're like, get out of town. That is crazy. That's even better to me in my mind when you've like completely made up basically a reality, a life lived. That's insane.
Yeah, that's a cool thing and a really hard thing to do, I feel like, at the same time.
Now, Katie, you also mentioned, of course, you're a musician. How dedicated do you have a band? Do you just like kind of jam out and play stuff? What is your musical career like?
Oh, non-existent. I've played a couple shows, but I've never had a steady band or anything. It's mostly just something I do for myself.
And what instrument do you play?
I play, I guess, all the rock instruments, you know, guitar, bass, a little bit of drums.
Do you, piano. Like, even though you don't have a band or perform or anything, are you an active songwriter?
Actually, no. It's funny you bring this up. I'm actually a shit songwriter, which is a weird thing being a fiction writer. And yeah, so I'm more of a musician. I'm more of a lead guitarist.
Okay, yeah. Speak with the strings.
Yeah. But yeah, I've tried writing songs my whole life, and they just turn out just awful.
So
God-awful.
You just rather sit down, somebody show me the music, and I'll play that for you.
Totally. Yeah, I tend to gravitate towards styles like blues and country and in punk and metal that kind of use, you know, templates almost that you play over.
Right, yeah, those classic blues riffs and stuff.
Yeah, totally.
So you're not actually actively seeking to, you are a musician obviously, but you're not actively seeking to do performance or hook up with a band. You're more focused on the writing aspect of your talents.
Yes, I would say so. I would love the opportunity to get a band going, but it's so much work, and writing is my primary thing.
That is really cool. Now, unfortunately, I'm looking at the clock here, and we are coming to the end of our time together, but I've learned an incredible amount about you. It's funny, you know, as I always do with anybody, I try to find out, learn as much about them as I can before I interview them so we can have a sort of direction or bullet points to talk about. And, I mean, you're, like, so new that it was hard to find, you know, cool things to talk about, but I mean, these are always the funnest when you sit down and like, I don't have a lot, but we'll just talk. And there's been so much to talk about, and it's so fun. I love the concept of Winnie. I love that you're getting great feedback so far for it in the new Bizarre Author series. You know, it's still young yet, but it sounds like you're having a lot of success with the book. And I wish you great success for the book for the rest of the year. And I look forward to seeing you know, what else you come up with after Winnie, you know, next year and beyond.
Yeah, thank you. I'm just so grateful for everyone who's been supportive and read the book and bought the book, and, you know, you for having me on here. I'm a little shell-shocked by it, honestly. So I guess last thing I would love to say is thank you to everyone for, you know, being there, being a cool audience.
Yeah.
And participants.
And if you haven't checked out Winnie, make sure you add it to your list of things to read this year. The new Bizarre Author Series, third release this year, Winnie by Katie Michelle Quinn. Katie, thank you so much for joining us on Bazong this week. I look forward to seeing more stuff from you in the future.
Yeah, thank you, Frank.
The inimitable Miss Katie Michelle Quinn of the 2018 New Bizarre Author Series, a book entitled Winnie. Make sure you check it out, Zongers, sooner if not later. Now, I did go back and check the other two previous releases for this year. The New Bizarre Author Series do have ebooks available currently. So I am sure if you just keep checking, if you're interested in the ebook version, just keep checking. Winnie will be available in ebook format soon enough, Zongers. Fear not. And Zongers, don't forget, I'm currently running a promotion wherein when you listen to Bazong and you go into the social medias and share the link for this week's current show, and hashtag it with Bazong, even hashtag it pin me Bazong, I will put all those people who share it with that hashtag, I'll put them all into a hat and draw a name at random, and they will win, you will win, a one-of-a-kind, no, there's actually a bunch of them, a Bazong pin for your denim jacket or your purse or your hoodie, really wherever you want to put a pin on. Pins are all the rage these days, and I've got Bazong pins to give away to those who help support Bazong by spreading out the word and links for the show. So remember, all you got to do is for the current week's show, share the link, hashtag Bazong pin me. And you can do this on Facebook, and you can do this on Twitter. Those are where I'm currently looking for those links. This past week, Zongers, nobody, maybe you did share the show, but you did not hashtag it Bazong or Bazong, hashtag Bazong pin me. So don't forget to do that when you share the link for the show. That's how I'm going to qualify you to go into the drawing for the pin. So, unfortunately, nobody won this week. And the first week, a fine gentleman from Australia won the pin. So I got to get him. I got to send a pin across the globe. But he did his thing. We had a couple of shares the first week. Nothing this past week. So, Zongers, if you stayed in this long, you're interested in getting yourself, trying to win yourself a Bazong pin, share this week's show. Hashtag Bazong pin me. I'm going to be looking for those hashtags come next week's show, and I'll announce the winner right here on Bazong. You'll have to listen in for your name, and if you hear your name, reach out to me. We'll get your address. We'll get your pin. It's just that simple, Zongers. And Zongers, too, another bit of exciting here for Bazong. I'll start making a bigger deal of this as we get closer. But Bazong is slated to do another round of Bazong Live this year at Scares at Care Convention in Williamsburg, Virginia, coming in August. I will be doing Bazong Live, and I've got something pretty freaking awesome planned this year. I hope I can pull it off. So I'm just gonna vague that now. Keep it vague. But if you can get down to Scares at Care this year, check out Bazong Live. It'll be on Saturday. I forget the time slot, but like I said, as we get closer and I finalize the details of what I'm going to be doing at Bazong Live, I will be sure to let you know here. Just a little something to perk you up if you're going to be headed down to Scares at Care this year. And with that in mind, Zongers, I thank you for listening in to Bazong once again. It's been a blast having you as always. I hope you enjoyed our interviews. We're going to keep going from here. Next week, there'll be another fine interview with another fine, bizarre, and weird fiction writer. But until then, Zongers, you're now free to go and listen to these other great Project Entertainment Network podcasts.
three guys with beards.
The usual gang of idiots, that's me, Christopher Golden.
New York Times best-selling authors.
My name is Jim Moore.
Interviews with pop culture stars and creators.
So I'm Jonathan Mayberry.
And they don't talk about politics.
Course of Human Events.
Jesus, let's not talk about the Course of Human Events today.
I said they don't talk about politics.
I suspect we may bend our rule about no politics on the beards and talk about politics on the beards.
Didn't you say they don't talk about politics?
If somebody else says something, we should...
Thank you.
Can anyone hear me? Am I all alone here?
Three guys with beards.
Tuesdays, exclusively on Project Entertainment Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, Project Entertainment Network presents The Mondo Method.
An old man with a goatee teaches a younger guy with a beard how to write.
Introducing first, he's the mentor and the greatest manager of all time, Mondo Guerrero. And from parts unknown, up-and-coming superstar, the Great Buddha.
Okay, so maybe the names are really just Armand Rosamilia and Chuck Buddha, and maybe you'll learn something while they're at it. Wednesdays exclusively on Project Entertainment Network.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.